All right, so we are just about ready to get started. Welcome, everyone. I'm Uni Ravindranathan, and I'm a program manager working on XAML tools at Microsoft. Today, we're going to be talking about building Metro-style XAML applications in Visual Studio and Blend. First, I'd like to apologize for the last-minute room change. So if you have to walk a long distance, my apologies. Also, if you've never heard of XAML before, this probably is not the right session for you. What's our agenda for today? We're going to be taking a quick tour of Blend and Visual Studio. I'm going to be showing you pretty much most features in these tools. So it's going to be a pretty quick walkthrough, and it's going to be broad. We're going to be talking about layout, editing properties, styling, resource editing, and so on and so forth. We're then going to I'll also describe a little bit the project templates that we provide you out of the box with Visual Studio and Blend that make it really easy for you to get started building Metro-style XAML-based applications in either Blend or Visual Studio. We're then going to talk a little bit about Windows 8 controls and how Blend and Visual Studio make it easy for you to edit and style these controls, as well as make them fully functional and light up in your application. We are finally going to take all these things that we have learned during the 45 minutes or so and put them into action to build parts of a Windows 8 application that is XAML-based. Of course, we won't have time to build the entire application, so we're going to just focus on small parts of it. Along the way, I'll be sure to mention some tricks and tips that you can use to leverage these tools to the best of their capabilities. I'll call them out as well. I'm going to make some assumptions. I'll assume that you have some basic knowledge of XAML. It doesn't really matter which platform you have kind of programmed in. You could have built a WPF application or a Silverlight application or even like a Windows Phone application. It doesn't really matter, but some basic knowledge of XAML is necessary. I'll also assume that you have some basic knowledge of .NET, and the language doesn't really matter. It could be C# or Visual Basic. Today, I'm going to be focusing on C#, but anything and everything I show today is equally applicable for either language. Also, anything I show today is also applicable for C++ as well. So if you're a C++ developer, that's fine too. Just some basic object-oriented programming knowledge is necessary. Finally, I'm going to assume that you have heard about Windows 8, and you have at least taken a look at a few of the Windows 8 applications, so you know a little bit about the design principles that are associated with building a Windows 8 application. Just to talk about the design principles, while it's really nice to have, we're going to be covering some of these today as well. I would highly recommend that you go and watch this session that Jensen Harris offered at our Build conference last year. It's titled "8 Traits of a Great Metro-style Application." In this session, Jensen talks a lot about how you can build applications that are fast and fluid, that actually focus on the content and not the Chrome that goes around the application, so the user is in charge, that have very high level of polish, and that hopefully can help you make some money at the end of the day. So a very highly recommended session that you should go and watch offline. So let's get started by talking about the tools today, which is our primary focus. Most of you have probably, actually, all of you, I'm sure, have used Visual Studio. It's a great environment for coding. So when we talk about coding, we talk about like editing the code itself, doing some refactoring, doing some profiling, and so on and so forth. Now, how many of you have heard of Blend before? Okay, so pretty much everyone. That's really good. So Blend's primary focus is design, right? So be that styling, template editing, be that ability to edit shapes and paths, do some animations, visual state authoring, and so on and so forth. So what we've done in Visual Studio 2012 is kind of marry the two in some way. So we have taken the design surface that works in Blend and put that inside Visual Studio. So all of the capabilities that you kind of came to know and love in Blend are pretty much available inside Visual Studio as well. Now, there are a few differences in features because the target audience is slightly different. What we wanted to call out here is, if you're a developer or a designer, no matter which hat you put in, there is a common set of things that you want to do. You want to create a few controls. You want to lay them out. You want to set some properties on them. You want to do some basic data binding, and in Visual Studio, in some cases, pretty advanced data binding, authoring views in terms of laying things out, and so on and so forth. So what we've done in Visual Studio 2012 is make it really easy for you to do that in VS as well. But the key point is Blend is optimized for visual design, whereas Visual Studio is optimized for sort of the coding experience. Now, like I was mentioning, there is some common set of things, but those are our sort of North Star vision points. So let's get started. First thing I'm going to talk a little bit about is the project templates that we provide you with out of the box that make it pretty easy for you to build your first Metro-style XAML application. But before we take a look at the Windows 8 project templates themselves, we should take a moment to think about how they've evolved over time. So if you have done some WPF development, the project templates that we provided you with are pretty simple. All they have is an empty canvas. You as the developer is responsible for putting content into it, defining your user experience, defining how the application behaves, and so on and so forth. With Silverlight, we took it to the next step, right? We added some basic navigation capabilities to the template. We added the ability to, you know, go between pages. So in the screenshot on the screen, you can see like a home button and an about button. As you click those buttons, different pages are presented to the user. So there was some basic navigation built into the project templates. With Windows Phone, we took it to the next level beyond that. So in addition to providing you with a sort of like a navigation framework, we also have some user experience elements built in. So the screenshot you're seeing here is for the Pivot application. That is the Pivot control. We have some sort of MVVM style data binding where the data being rendered is coming from, like a data model. There are multiple page Pivot items that you can move back and forth. When you click on an item, we navigate to the details of the item, and so on and so forth. With Windows 8, we have taken it to an entirely different level. Along with all of the things that we talked about before, we also have a whole bunch of other things in the templates themselves. The templates can be almost thought of as a fully functional application. What we mean by that is the templates are pretty rich in user experience. So we have put a lot of attention to detail to make sure that the experience that the templates provides is pretty consistent with the experience that's set out by, you know, Windows user experience in general. I mean, we want to make sure that no matter which technology you use, whether you use XAML or HTML, the apps that you build for the end user have to be consistent. And so we have put a lot of emphasis in either platform to make sure that this is the case. So as you can see here, you know, all of the alignments are taken care of. So the content itself aligns pretty well with the header. The back button is positioned correctly. The items have uniform spacing between them. So they are pretty compliant with the Windows guidelines. The templates are also very rich in features. We'll take a look at, you know, how these things are built in a second, but I wanted to call out a couple things. In Windows 8, it is expected that users of your application will take it and from the full screen experience into the docked sort of experience. And it's important that your applications behave correctly when the users do this. The templates that we provide you with Visual Studio are fully functional from this perspective. We do like various kinds of view states in terms of snapping, full screen. We also support portrait mode as well and landscape. So if the user was to actually use the template on your tablet and rotate it, everything should look and behave correctly. The applications that you build for Windows 8 are going to be run on a wide range of devices, right? You're going to be using a 10-inch tablet all the way to a full-screen HD display, as you're seeing here. So the apps that you build, you have to put in a lot of thought and, you know, so that they kind of scale up correctly. We have taken care of all of this in the templates as well. So that completes pretty much my slides, and I'm going to do demos from here on out. I'm going to show a lot of content, so I'm going to go a little fast. If you have any questions, please feel free to interrupt me at any time, and I'll do my best to answer them, or we can definitely take it. I can show it at the end as well. So that's it. Let me switch to my demo machine. The first thing I want to take a look, I wanted to walk you through is a project template inside Visual Studio. We want to take the behind-the-scenes look and take a look at how these things are actually built and how they work. So let's go ahead and create a new project. When you bring up the new project dialog in Visual Studio, you'll notice that we have a bunch of templates out of the box, default with Visual Studio. They are also available with Blend. The blank application, as the name indicates, is blank. It has nothing in it. You as the developer is responsible for putting together all of the contents in that application. The grid application provides this multi-page layout of items that are grouped. And as users navigate, you know, across groups or across items, we navigate to different pages for the user. They also have a lot of additional functionality that I'm going to talk about in a second. The split application is pretty similar to the grid application. It is this master detail type of application where the first page shows all the items, and then you can click on an item and view its details. And finally, in addition to these project templates, we also have the class library as well as the Windows runtime component project templates. What these allow you to do is build control libraries where you can put your custom content into it, be that controls or styles, and reuse that across multiple applications. The one thing I wanted to mention is today we're going to, like I said at the beginning of the talk, we're going to focus on C#. But anything that we see here, you can imagine if you're a native developer doing C++ development, it's applicable there as well. Same for Visual Basic. So let's go ahead and create a grid application. I'm just using C# because that's the one I feel most at home with. But the same concepts apply everywhere. Before we take a look at the project templates, project template and what's happening in there, let's just build and run it. So here is your basic grid application. We have built this template as more of an MVVM style, so there is clear separation between your visuals as well as the data model that goes behind it. Data binding is used to tie them together. Let's go ahead and click on an item. This is basically a grouped representation of items. Let's go ahead and click on an item. You're taken to the details of that particular item. Within a particular group, if you wanted to move across items, you can press the next and previous buttons, and we take you to back different items. This is accomplished by using the standard flip view control that comes out of the box with Windows 8. That makes it super easy for you to accomplish this scenario. You can hit the back button that takes you back to the home page of the application. You can click on a group title. You can see more details about the group. So in this case, there is the header of the group, a picture description of the group, some description text, as well as all the items themselves. You can click on an item, and you're taken back to the same page that we saw a second ago. Now, what I wanted to call out is, in addition to all of this functionality, which seems pretty obvious, this application has a lot more that's going on behind the covers for you. So the first thing we want to take a look at is how this application behaves when the user was to go and dock it, so to speak. So when the user docks the application to the left hand side, you'll notice that the visualization of the same data changes from this full screen layout to something that kind of fits in a narrow column. So it's the same data that's being presented to the user, just the visualization has changed. And then you can still accomplish everything. You can navigate to an item, the whole back stack just works fine, and so on and so forth. The other thing that the template supports is the ability to come back to life when Windows decides to terminate it. So if you've heard about Windows 8, there is this thing called process lifecycle management, which means Windows will choose to kill your application under certain circumstances. So for example, if your user was not really using the application for long periods of time, or if your application was consuming a lot of resources, Windows might choose to terminate it as when the user is not actively using the application. You as the developer are responsible for bringing the application back to life in the same state that Windows decided to kill it. Because from the user's perspective, that's a pretty seamless experience, right? And by the way, the same sort of experience also exists on the Windows Phone, just that on Windows 8, we have done a bunch of work to make it really easy for you to sort of create these applications. So that's our quick demo of the project templates. Let's take a look at what's going on behind the scenes. The first thing we should take a look at is the three XAML files that constitute the UI that we just saw. The home page of the application is this thing called the grouped items page. It is a XAML file that shows a logical grouping of various items in your application. It is just a XAML file that contains a button, some text for the header of the application, as well as what we call a grid view control for displaying all of the items in a grouped fashion. We'll take a look at some specific Windows 8 controls at a later point of time, so I'm going to talk about that when we get to that. For a particular group, when you click on a group title, we take you to the group detail page, and when you click on an item, we take you to the item detail page. So for all of these pages, there is a pretty consistent experience. There is the back button, so the user can navigate back to the page, the title, as well as some content. In particular, I wanted to call out the item detail page. The ability to switch between items is accomplished by using a standard Windows 8 control that's called a flip view. It comes out of the box. The users can just swipe or use the mouse to navigate across items. So those are the various XAML pages. We'll talk a little bit about how to build these things at a later point of time. I also wanted to call out your attention to certain other components that we provide out of the box with these project templates. Even if you were to start your application from scratch, you can still leverage some of these components that we provide you with because they're pretty useful. The first thing I wanted to show you is this file called standardstyles.xaml. It is a resource dictionary, which means it is a collection of resources. In particular, we are talking about various kinds of styles. So let's take a look at grouped items page. Oops, right here. The back button here is a standard button control. So as you can see over here, we have just styled it to make it look like that, you know, the one with the chevron, so the user knows that the button takes them back to the previous page. The way this is accomplished is by just using standard styling, and the style for that comes from standardstyles.xaml. So to take a look at it, if you take a look at the XAML, here is the style that is applied. You can use the property inspector's capabilities to navigate to the style where it's defined. So if I click go to source, I'm going to the location where the style is located. And as you can see, that is in standardstyles.xaml. So this particular XAML file is pretty useful even if you're not actually using this template and starting from scratch, because it defines a whole bunch of styles that you'll find, you know, are pretty easy to consume in your application. So I highly recommend taking a look at it. Now, of course, this is local to your project, so you're free to modify it to your heart's content. So if your application had a slightly different experience, you, like, for example, the back button was a different color, you should definitely go ahead and modify it, as much as you want. The second component I want to talk about is this control that we have called the layout aware page. The layout aware page is a subclass of a page, which means it derives from page. It adds some functionality to the that the page is missing. In particular, it adds the ability to respond to Windows's events when the user is changing the layout of the application. So when the user changes the view state from full screen to docked, this page is subscribing for an event and then essentially notifying the UI that it needs to change its appearance through visual states. So all it is doing is subscribing for an event and causing a VSM transition. So if you take a look at grouped details page, or let's say grouped items page, and we go at the very bottom, how many of you are familiar with the whole concept of Visual State Manager and states and things like that? So not many of you. That's okay. We'll take a look at this particular concept in detail later as well. But here is a visual state for sort of like the docked view of the application. One of the cool things that that both Visual Studio and Blend provide you with is this device panel. Just like before, we're going to talk in detail about this panel later, but one of the functionalities of this panel is the ability to change the visualization of your application from one state to another at design time. So let me just zoom out so you can see what's going to happen. There you go. Now, I'm going to change this to the snapped state. You'll notice that at design time, we have taken your application from being this full screen view to the snap view. So this option is super helpful for you to design your various views as you're building your application. We're going to take a look at device panel as well at a later point of time. The last component that I wanted to call out in the project templates that you might find pretty useful is this thing called Suspension Manager. Suspension Manager provides you with a bunch of helper functionality that makes it super simple for you to save your state and come back to it at a later point of time. In Windows 8, the state is not just your data model, because that's pretty simple to save and restore. It is also your entire back stack. So as the user is navigating through multiple pages, you really need to also save the whole navigation stack. So when the user comes back to the application and hits back button, you kind of take the user back to the page where they came from. So the Suspension Manager has a bunch of helper functions that you could consider, you know, using in your application as well. So far, we have taken a look at the basic grid project template, its building blocks, and now we're going to delve a little deeper into the tool itself and what functionalities we provide you to build some of these applications on your own. Any questions about project templates? Otherwise, I'm going to switch gears into the meat of the topic today, which is the design tool itself. So let's go ahead and create, let's start simple. So I'm going to go ahead and create a blank application in Visual Studio. And I'm going to walk you through the next 20 minutes. I'm going to spend walking you through the entire breadth of features that we have in Blend and Visual Studio, which you might consider useful. I'm going to go pretty quickly because that's a lot of things to cover. Please feel free to interrupt me if you want me to, you know, talk about any particular feature in greater detail. The first First thing you notice when you bring up Visual Studio is the familiar design surface. It's completely what you see is what you get. So we try to mimic your exact visuals as they would in your running application. There is also the XAML view. The XAML view is very similar to what you've seen in Visual Studio 2010. It supports full IntelliSense. So let's go ahead and start creating some content. The first thing I'm going to do is type some XAML, because I'm going to show you IntelliSense. We give you full IntelliSense for types that come out of the box with Windows 8, or types that may be in your project, as well as third-party types that you may acquire from other, you know, sort of control vendors. So I'm going to create a button. I'm going to put some content. I'm going to say, hello, world. And I'm going to change the font size to something large so people can see what I'm typing. Let's say 48. And I'm going to close the tag. As soon as I type the markup, the design surface updates. It's always synchronized to the markup. So if you make any change to the design surface, you can immediately see the markup that gets generated and vice versa. If you make a change to markup, the design surface updates as well. This should give you pretty good confidence in, you know, making sure that the XAML that we generate is really what you want for your application. So as you can see, I'm moving the elements around, and the margin is updating to reflect the action that I just did. So that's your basic XAML editor. Couple things to take a look. Like, you can, if you want to change the way the XAML editor is laid out, you can choose to go full screen, in which case there is no design surface. You pretty much see your XAML. You can switch back to the full design experience, or you can choose to remain in the split view experience. You can change the orientation of the XAML editor itself. So if you use this button here, you kind of change the XAML editor to be on top of the design surface. And same thing, there are these options here to change from sort of like the side-by-side layout, vertical sort of like stacking to the horizontal stacking. Let's go back to the defaults that we had. So that's about it. The first panel I want to talk about is the toolbox. The toolbox, most of you are familiar with, even if you've used WinForms or WPF, it's a collection of controls. It could be controls that are part of Windows, or it could be just custom types that you might write, or third-party types that you might choose to install in your machine. Let's go ahead and create a control, let's say the button. So that's a pretty familiar gesture as well. You just select the control and draw it. There are a couple of other ways that you can create controls. You can drag and drop the control on the design surface. This is pretty useful if you want to actually exactly position the control, but still make the control have its default size. You can also double-click the control to create it. When you double-click the control gets created with its default sort of positioning. So in this case, the button is left and top aligned, and you are responsible for changing the alignment at a later point of time. So one of the cool things I wanted to point out that's new to Visual Studio 2012 is the ability to search for controls in the toolbox. Very quickly, you'll notice that the toolbox gets like really messy with a large number of controls, and it becomes hard for you to sort of maintain it. The search feature of the toolbox makes it really simple. So let's say I want to create a radio button. I can just search for it and create it really quickly. So I really like this feature a lot and makes it super simple to create controls. The second panel that I wanted to show you inside Visual Studio was the document outline. The document outline is sort of like a tree view representation of your markup. As you can see here, everything is pretty much synchronized. So if I select an element in the document outline, the XAML gets selected as well as the design surface as well. So we keep everything in synchronization. The document outline provides a couple useful, interesting things. The first thing you can do is rename controls. So I go ahead and call this like my button. As soon as I make the change, you'll notice that the XAML updated, and so did the property inspector to show the name itself. You can also rename controls, by the way, via the property inspector. So let's say you go and change it here. The same thing happens. Everything is in synchronization. So that's one thing. I wanted to call out a couple things that designers, people who have used Blend, might be very, very familiar with. It's the ability to lock and hide controls. So hiding a control is a useful trick because often you will find yourself in a situation where you have multiple layers of XAML that are stacked on top of each other. And so if you want to visually edit a layer that's at the very bottom, you'll not be able to get to it because the layers at the top are preventing the click from going through. So hiding an element is a useful trick. So let's take this radio button and let's click this I button over here. As soon as I do it, the radio button is now hidden. If I run this application, the radio button will still show up because nothing has changed from a XAML perspective or a runtime XAML perspective. This is just a design time feature. You can click the button back again to bring it back to life. The other feature I wanted to show you is this ability to lock elements. Often you spend a lot of time precisely controlling the position of the element, what attributes are set on it, and so on and so forth. You don't want then to accidentally go and change it. So, for example, let's take a look at this radio button, right? I've positioned it correctly. I like where it's at. Now, let's say I press the next button by mistake as I'm just navigating my keyboard. You can see the radio button is now starting to shift. And I don't want that, right, because I've spent all this effort. So locking an element is useful for, you know, making sure that you cannot accidentally change it through the design surface itself. As soon as the element is locked, I can no longer select it, right? You can see, like, it's no longer being, I can select everything else, but not the radio button, right? And so it makes it super, super hard for me to, like, go and, you know, accidentally manipulate it. So that's a useful trick as well. The last panel I wanted to show in Visual Studio before we shift our focus to Blend was the Property Inspector. The Property Inspector, most of you must be pretty familiar with, so I'm just going to do a really quick, let's go ahead and delete all these elements. And let's create a rectangle. The Property Inspector has this. We have taken the Blend Property Inspector and put it inside Visual Studio, so all of the capabilities that you love in Blend are also now available. So you can change some fill, you can change the stroke. We have rich value editors for pretty much all the properties that you care about. Let's also take a look at a couple other things. So let's say you have a large number of properties, all these platforms have controls that have tons of properties. Very hard to find a property. You can search for it just like that, just like what you did in the toolbox. So I'm going to search for stroke thickness. So as soon as I search for stroke, the Property Inspector filters to show only the properties that match the name that I just typed. So here's stroke thickness. I'm going to go and change it. Now, one of the things that the Property Inspector allows you to do is to change, double and integer values using the mouse wheel. It's a useful technique because you don't want to keep typing and then undoing and typing as you fine-tune your value. It's pretty simple to change the values using the mouse wheel. In addition to this, the Property Inspector also allows you to change the categorization of properties. Right now, what you have is sort of like a categorized view of properties. If you want to change this to more of an alphabetized listing, you can just use this option here and change from category to name. Now, all of the properties are listed alphabetically. So these are a couple useful ways that you can go ahead and edit properties. So that's the quick 5-minute overview of everything that's in Visual Studio. There is one panel that we didn't cover, device panel. We're going to go to that in a second once we take a look at some of the things in Blend. So let me go ahead and delete what we have right over here. I'm going to save what we have so far, which is a big nothing, and I'm going to edit the same file in Blend. So one of the things that we have added in Visual Studio is the ability to right-click on a XAML file and say open in Blend. The same thing is also available for Blend as well. You can easily edit the file in Visual Studio. Makes it really easy for you to switch back and forth between Blend and Visual Studio. Let's go ahead and take a look at all the things that are available in Blend. I'm going to not spend too much time here because most of you have already used Blend. The projects panel in Blend is similar to the Solution Explorer. Blend and Visual Studio share the exact same solution format, so there is good interoperability between the tools. The asset library is similar to the toolbox panel in Visual Studio. It's a listing of all the controls that are native to Windows or third-party controls, as well as your own custom controls that you're building for your application. The document outline in Visual Studio is called the Object and Timeline panel. It has the same functionality like Visual Studio, but it also allows you to do animations. We're going to look at a way to create a quick animation in a second. So there's more functionality in this panel than what's available in Visual Studio. The Property Inspector is pretty much the same as it's in Visual Studio, the exact same thing, so I'm going to skip past it. There are two panels in Blend that are not available in Visual Studio. One of them is the Resources panel. The Resources panel is useful for creation, manipulating resources. So if you have resources that you want to rename or you want to edit, Resource panel is the place where you'd go. We'll take a look at that in a second. The second panel that's not available in Visual Studio is the States panel. The States panel, like we were mentioning, is useful for doing states editing. We're going to take a look at this also as well. So let's focus on things that's not there in Visual Studio and only in Blend now. The first thing I wanted to do was and by the way, what I'm going to show now is available in both the tools, but it's pretty important for me to show it, is layout. If you're building applications, you're more than likely going to use the grid panel. The grid panel is one of the coolest things in XAML, as we all know. It allows you to kind of dynamically lay content out and make edits to it. So let's take a look at some of the design experience enhancements that we have done for the grid panel in the latest versions of Blend and Visual Studio. So what I'm going to do is I've drawn a grid panel out, as you can see over here. Let's switch to the properties so you can see the type here as well. I want to create like a simple two-column sort of messenger window type of layout. So there's a button on the bottom right, and there are a couple of text boxes for users to type and send messages. So to get that layout, I need to start creating columns because I want to correctly position and ensure that everything works correctly when the user is resizing the application. So let's go ahead and create a couple of columns, a column over here and a row over here. So what this has allowed me to do is kind of divide the grid into two sections. Over here is going to be a button. Everywhere else, it's going to be text boxes. So let's go ahead and create a button in the cell over here. And a couple of text boxes, just for simplicity's sake. So I'm going to create a text box here, and I'm also going to create another text box here. Let's go ahead and select all these controls and make them like take up all the space that's available out there. So I'm going to press the control key, and I'm going to click on various elements. That's a way to quickly select multiple elements in the design surface. I want to clear out all the layout properties because I want to start from scratch and set everything myself. So I'm going to right click. I'm going to use this useful command that we have called reset layout, and I'm going to call all. When I use that option, what has happened is Blend has gone through all the XAML that's there and cleared out all the layout properties that exist. And so I get all the cells are completely filled up. In the buttons case, the default layout properties make the button kind of left aligned and central aligned, and that doesn't look good. I'm going to change that in the property inspector to make it take up all the space. So I've changed the horizontal alignment to stretch and the vertical alignment to stretch as well. So that's pretty much. Now what I want to do is I want to give a little bit of space between the text box at the top and the text box at the bottom. So I'm going to select the text box at the top, and I'm going to change the margin of the text box to have a little bit of space. So there we go. So that looks a little decent. I want to do the same thing for the button as well. I want to have some space relative to the left-hand text box. So I'm going to do the exact same thing, select left, and change the margin to 10. So there's your basic layout. I'm not going to spend too much time more on this. So the one thing to note here is as I'm resizing the elements, you'll notice that everything is proportionately resizing, and that's not really what I want. I want all of the empty space or all of the available space just to be taken by this cell, and I don't want these text boxes to resize at all. The way I would do it is to use the grid's abilities to lock columns. With Visual Studio 2012 and Blend 5, we've introduced pretty cool options where you can control the grid pretty precisely. So I want to say, okay, for this column, I don't want it to be proportionately sized. I want it to have a fixed pixel size. So I go and change this to pixel. What has happened behind the covers, as you can see, let's go ahead and do the same here as well so we can see it for both. You'll see that basically one of the rows and columns is now taking up all the space. The other one has precise height and width associated with it. When I make the switch and I resize the columns, you'll notice that only this text box is taking up all of the available space. The rest of the columns and rows are remaining fixed size. One final thing I wanted to show about the grid panel that we added in Blend 5 and Visual Studio 2012, you can select a column and move the column to arbitrary location. So if you wanted to move this column all the way to the front, you would use this command called move column before, and you can see everything has been transposed. All the properties are still retained, so if I resize, I get exactly the behavior I want, except that it's now in sort of a right-to-left mode as opposed to the default thing that I just created. Okay, so that's the grid panel. I'm not going to spend too much more time on this one, so let me just zoom out a little bit so you can see what's going on. Just a little bit. There we go. One final panel I want to talk about that you'll also use a lot is the stack panel. The stack panel is used to kind of stack elements in a stack order. Let's go ahead and create a few buttons. So that's my three buttons in the stack panel. What I want to do is I want to take one of the buttons and move it at the top so that it's at the top of the stack panel. I can do that by just selecting the button and moving it to its right location. You can see there is this little adorner, a blue line, that indicates where the element will end up being. So I want the element to be at the top. I go and drop it, and that's the way you would reorder elements in a stack panel. So that's some really basic layout. It's also available equally in Blend and Visual Studio, but I just want to show so that you have an idea of the capabilities of the tool. Now, let's go into some things that are only available in Blend. And the first thing I want to show you is the resource panel and its features. Let's create a couple of rectangles. So I'm going to create one and copy and paste it. So here's a couple of rectangles. What I want to do is I want to create sort of like a fill for the rectangle and reuse it across all the rectangles I have in my application. Creating resources is a great way if you want to share the same value across multiple elements so you don't duplicate it all over the place and you have this one central place where you can go and make an edit. The way to create resources is to select an element, change the property to the property that you want. So in this case, let's say I want like a blue sort of fill. And then you can use the menu on each of the properties that allows you to convert the particular value to a resource. So I'm going to convert this into a new resource. I'm given a dialog that allows me to name my resource. So in this case, I'm going to call it my brush. You can also choose the location where the resource is located at. In some cases, you may want to use the resource across your application, and so you kind of choose to put it in the application scope. In this case, I want to do that, so I'm going to do that. Let's go ahead and hit OK. So what has happened behind the covers is Blend has extracted the blue value that I had for fill and converted it into a resource, and we are now referring to that resource in the XAML. Now, what I want to do is apply the same resource that I just created to the second rectangle over here. There are a couple of ways you can do it. The first is for certain kinds of resources like brushes, we have really a really useful way, this brush resources tab. It lists all the resources that are local to your project, as well as brushes that are supplied by Windows. So these system brushes are Windows-specified brushes that you should consider using if you want to create really theme-compliant applications. But in this case, I really want to use the blue brush. So I can just go ahead and select it. And Blend has actually filled the rectangle with the blue brush. There is another way to apply resources. You can use the menu that's associated with every property. And you can essentially use the local resource option and select it over here. Now, what's up with Resource Panel? The Resource Panel allows you to manipulate the resources in your project. So what I want to do here is, first thing is I want to change the blue brush to be a slightly different blue. I go and select the value out here and make a tweak. As I'm making the change, everything is updating on the design surface in real time. So that's pretty cool, right? The second thing that you can do is I really don't like the name My Brush. I want to change it to something else. I want to change this to like something that's more meaningful, like a blue brush or something like that. The way to rename resources is just to double-click on the resource. You go into the rename mode, just standard renaming gesture, and you can call it Blue Brush. As soon as I hit OK, Blend has detected that the same brush is in use in multiple files, and it's asking you as to what action you want to take to fix this problem. I just want to use the default thing, which is I want to rename the thing everywhere. I hit OK, and Blend has gone ahead and renamed all of the brushes everywhere in your application, wherever it is being used. So that's basic resource editing for you. Let's take a look at animation capabilities. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a button. When the button is clicked, I want to go and play an animation. So for that, first we need to create an animation. To create an animation, you would go to the Object and Timeline panel, and that's where you would create animations. If you're familiar with animation tools, in particular video editing tools, you create these storyboards, which are sort of like synchronized animations, and that's what we're doing here. A storyboard is nothing but a collection of animations. So let's go ahead and create a storyboard. Let's call it My Animation. Hit OK. Now you're presented with this panel that allows you to create an entire animation. What I want to do is I want to basically, over a period of 1 second, I want to change the position of the rectangle from where it is to somewhere on the right. Of course, it's not a very fancy animation, just a simple one, just to show the concept. When you've done it, you can, of course, use Blend to preview the animation without actually having to run the application. You can use this little play button over here, and you can preview the animation at design time itself. Now, the next step I want to do is run the animation when the button is clicked. Unlike WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone, right now we don't have behaviors for Windows 8 Metro XAML. So you'll have to write a little bit of code. We know we are getting this feedback a lot that people like behaviors. How many of you heard of behaviors before? Okay, quite a few. It's a way to do interactivity without writing any code. So you could pretty much, in one click, accomplish what I'm going to do now with a few lines of code, right? So it does add a lot of value. So of course, you would do most of the coding in Visual Studio, but for the sake of quickness, I'm just going to do this in Blend. To add an event handler to the button, you would go to the event handlers section in the property inspector. You'd click on one of the events that you're interested in, and let's say we create an event handler called play animation. As soon as I do it, a method gets created for you, and you can add some code to it. Of course, doing this in Visual Studio is going to be much easier, but I'm going to just do it here. And then as soon as I find my storyboard, all I have to do is play it. So that's s.begin. Of course, there is no way to, the storyboard namespace is missing, so I need to go and add that as well, using windows.ui.xaml. So of course, doing this in Visual Studio would have been faster, but I'm going to do it here. Let's go ahead and run it. When I click the button, the animation gets played, right? So lack of behaviors makes things slightly harder, but of course you can do the exact same thing by writing code as well. So let's go ahead and kill this application. The one final feature I wanted to show in Blend before we switch our focus to Windows 8 features in particular is styling and templating, because a lot of you haven't heard about how to edit styles. So what I want to do is take this button that looks like your default square button and dramatically change the look and feel. That's one of the really cool things that you can do pretty easily with the XAML platform. What I'm going to do is the first thing I'm going to do to get started is suck in the style that exists for the default button into my local project so I can start making some tweaks to it. The way to copy the style into your project is to use this command here called edit template, edit a copy. You can name your style to whatever you want. So in this case, I'm going to call it my button style and hit OK. What just happened is we detected what the style was for the default Windows control. We copied the entire thing into your project and provided you with a quick starting point where you can start making tweaks to that particular style. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to delete all of the default content in the style, and I'm going to start from scratch, right? So just real simple, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an ellipse. And I want to change, so this is my this is my button. At this point, if I run this application, it is still a button. I can click on it, and the animation will play. But I want to do more. I want to add some interactivity to it. When the user presses the button, you expect some sort of hover behavior. And when the user presses the button, you expect some sort of visual feedback to the user as well. And I'm going to do this using Visual States. Visual States is a really neat feature that allows you to sort of define interactivity for the button. So I'm going to select the pressed state, and I'm going to make a couple of changes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to select the ellipse and change its fill from the value that is there to a different value. So in the pressed state, what I've specified is the button should have this particular fill. In the pointer over, which is the equivalent of the mouse over, I'm going to change the fill of the ellipse from here to some other color right over there. So I've defined how the button should behave in response to various events with just a couple of clicks, right? Let's go ahead and run it and see what we get. So you can see as I move the mouse over, I'm getting the mouse over effect, and when I press, it's changing to white. So it makes it super simple for you to create interactivity for various controls. And we're going to see how this feature helps you style Windows 8 controls in a second as well. So that's basic state editing for you. With this, we have covered pretty much the breadth of features in Blend and Visual Studio. There is a lot more that you could potentially go into, but hopefully you get the entire big picture here. So with this, I'm going to shut down Blend and switch my focus to Windows 8. By the way, one of the things that you noticed here, I made the change. I switched to Blend. Visual Studio detected that the file changed, popped a dialog. I hit OK, and the XAML file got reloaded. So there's really cool interop between Blend and Visual Studio. No matter which tool you use, you should be at home with the XAML editor experience in either tool. So one thing, now we're going to switch gears into Windows 8. The first thing I wanted to show you is what we skipped initially, the device panel. The device panel is probably my favorite Windows 8 feature because it allows you to do a lot of things that would have taken a lot of time otherwise. And that's what a tool's for, right? So let's go ahead and create, what I've done is created a grid app. I'm opening the default XAML file. And I'm going to change a few settings in the device panel. We can take a look at how it's going to help you. One of the things that you can potentially build is applications that have different themes, right? If you're creating a mail application, you probably want to have white background with black text on it, because that's what most people like to actually read their mail as. On the other hand, if you're creating like an RSS reader or a news reader or a weather display, it's okay to have this dark background with some contrasting colors in front. The device panel makes it easy for you to preview your application under multiple themes. Let's go ahead and change the theme from dark to light. As soon as I do it, the design surface updates, and you can actually see how your application looks like in the light theme, right? Which is pretty cool, because it allows me to find flaws in my application for which I'd have to run the application, see what the problem is, and so on and so forth. One final thing, Windows also requires that the applications that you build are accessible, which means you should consider high contrast and things like that into consideration for good reasons. The device panel allows you to preview your application as it would in high contrast settings. So let's go ahead and select high contrast one. Windows has a few kinds of high contrast settings that we provide you with. As soon as you make this change, you'll notice that the design surface is updated to show your application with this setting. And you are starting to see some faults, right? So if you take a look at the button, there is no circle around it. So that's, ideally not great for the high contrast users. So the device panel makes it super simple for you to sort of change the theme and preview the application as it would at runtime. The second thing I wanted to call out is, let's switch back to the default dark theme. The second thing I wanted to call out is this feature for changing the display size of your application. Like we were talking initially, it is expected that the users of your application are going to use it on a wide variety of devices. And so it's also important that you design your application for all those form factors as well. The display settings of the device panel make it easy for you to change the settings so you can see them at different form factors. In this case, you're using the default 1366 by 768 at 100% or 148 DPI setting. Let's go ahead and change it to full HD, which is 1920 by 1080. As soon as I make this change, you'll notice that several things have happened, right? You can now see more items in your application. By that, I mean groups and individual items in a group. So it's important that the layout that you define for your application kind of works at different form factors, and the device panel makes it easy for you to preview your application in different form factors. So that's a pretty useful feature as well. Now, if you didn't have the device panel, you'd potentially have to go and buy a bunch of devices and test your application in those devices. Of course, there is a simulator as well that allows you to change the resolution dynamically and preview your application. So these are some interesting techniques that you can use to sort of design for multiple form factors. A couple other quick things. Device panel allows you to show and hide the Chrome. Let me just zoom out a little bit. You can see here there is the Windows 8 slate-like appearance, but you can turn on and off by using the device panel. We also took a look at the views authoring feature, which allows you to preview your application in landscape, portrait, docked, and so on and so forth. So the device panel is an interesting panel that allows you to sort of design for Windows 8 in some ways. With that said, we have covered all of the basics of the tools that's there. Let's switch gears and put some of the things that we have learned into action to build bits and pieces of an actual application. So before doing that, let's take a look at the application itself. This is something that I built last weekend. It's just a photo catalog application. One thing to note here is there is a live tile. It shows the album that the application contains, or one of the albums that the application contains. It's very simple, by the way, to write a live tile. You should definitely consider making a live tile for your application. The APIs are pretty simple to use. This is three lines of code to get a live tile, essentially. I launched the application, and I'm shown a bunch of albums that I have. I can click in an album, and I can actually see more details about the album. I can go to a photo, and I can take a look at all the items in that album. If I like an album a lot, I can right click on it. I can add it to favorites. And there you have it, it's showing up in the favorites. And finally, the last piece of functionality that this application has is the ability to view all the albums on a map. So here's the Bing Maps control that's showing all the albums on the map. This is one of the pieces that we're going to build today in this session over here. So you can zoom in, and you can click on an item, and it takes you to that particular album so you can see more details about it. So we're going to build a couple of these pieces just to show how everything ties together over the next 10 or 15 minutes. So let's get started. Let's go ahead and open the project. What I did is I took the grid application, and I kind of customized it to make it look the way it does. So if I run it, it looks pretty similar to what we just saw. It's just a grid application. We're going to start making some tweaks to it. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to add like a date at the top here, so the user knows the date at which the trip was made. The second thing we're going to do today is we're going to add an application bar and make it functional. So when the user clicks on an item, we kind of add the we'll take a look at designing the application bar itself. And last but not the least, right now clicking this button is not really doing anything. We're going to design that map view and create all the pins on that particular map as well. So this should give you like an overview of a bunch of features that we have for Windows 8. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's open mainpage.xaml. This is the home page of the application that is listing all the albums. I'm going to start editing the template of the grid view itself. So here's the grid view. The layout of this application is very similar to the grid application, so I'm not going to spend too much time explaining how this thing works. The data is bound in terms of the fact that all of the data is coming from sort of a data model. And so I'm going to have to use like template editing to get to the data itself and start changing its look and feel. So to change the data template itself, you can use the edit additional templates, edit item template menu. And when you make this choice, you're taken to this view that allows you to change the look and feel of an individual item. What I want to do is I want to add a text block and position it at the top right. So I go to the toolbox, I search for text block, and I can double-click it to create an instance of a text block. Now what I want to do is I want to position the text block in the appropriate location. I'm going to use the same tricks that we saw before. I'm going to right-click, reset layout all, so I clear out all the properties. There are really no properties in the text block anymore, except for the default text, which I don't care about. I'm going to position the text box is using the layout category. So I'm going to say I want the text block to be right aligned, and I want the text block to be top aligned. Oops. There we go. My bad. I should have changed to the pointer tool. There we go. Right and top. So the text block is positioned appropriately, now sort of like left and top aligned. I'm going to give it some breathing room, so I'm going to set some margin on it. I'm going to say my right margin is 10. So you can see it moved to the left, and my bottom margin and my top margin is 10 as well. So it's moving a little bit to the bottom. The font seems pretty small. I'm going to change the font size. So I'm going to change the font size from, that's too big. Let's say we select something like 18. That looks about right. And finally, I'm going to change the foreground color from black all the way to white. So now I have a text block in my application. Let's go ahead and run this application. Nothing really fancy is going to happen. You're going to see like the same text block across all of the elements here. That's not good, because what I really want to do is data bind it so it's dynamic and it actually gets its property from the data model itself. So let's take a look at data binding. So let's go back to the same place that we came from. And we're going to change. Oops, that's not good. And we're going to change the property so that it's no longer static and it's dynamic. To change data bindings, you again use the menu that is associated with the property. So in this case, here is the text property. You can see like it's right now set to a constant value, but I want it to be data bound. So I'm going to bring up the menu and select the Create Data Binding option. It brings up the data binding dialog, which allows you to create and edit bindings. If you are familiar with WPF or Silverlight or Windows Phone, you can create a variety of kinds of bindings. You can bind to other elements. You can bind to a completely different data source. or you can bind to what we call as the data context. The data context is the data object that is applicable at that particular scope. The entire grid view was bound to an entire collection, but an item in a grid view is just bound to an item in a collection itself. So that's what's happening here. You can see that Visual Studio is intelligent enough to show that, oh, these are the various kinds of bindings that you can create. In this case, I really want to select this property, which I have in my data model, called trip date string, which is just a beautifully formatted version of the date of the trip. So I hit OK, and there you have it. So that's my basic like data binding that's getting updated. If I go back to my home page, you can see now I'm seeing like different trip dates for each of the trips that I made. Of course, my sample data is not correct, but at runtime, you can see there is different dates for each of the trips that I've made. So that's simple data binding for you. The next thing I wanted to take a look at is I wanted to show you how to create and edit an application bar. An application bar is a Windows 8 concept it's also available on Windows Phone as well, that comes from the bottom or the top when the user swipes the fingers across the bottom or the top of the screen. I want to create an application bar and add a command to it. So let's take a look at how to do that. I'm going to open Trip View, which is basically a page for a particular trip. To create an application bar, you would go to the toolbox and search for what we call is the app bar control, and drag and drop it to a location anywhere on the design surface. It doesn't really matter. You can put it anywhere you want. The page control in Windows 8 has two properties called the bottom app bar and the top app bar, because each page can potentially have two application bars, one at the top and the one at the bottom. We want to use the bottom app bar because that's where we want to define our application bar to be. So to do that, you just drag and drop the control into the right property that you want. In this case, it's the bottom app bar, but you could also put it in the top app bar if you want, and drop it there, right? So that's my app bar that's defined. It's showing up pretty small. That's because when we created the control, Visual Studio was not smart enough to not set the property for width. I'm going to clear it, and you'll notice that it'll now take up all of the space. If I deselect and reselect it, it'll take up all of the space at the bottom of the page, and now I can start putting content into it. The first thing I want to do is add a button to the stack panel. We provide you with two stack panels, so you can create commands at the left or the right, and you don't really need to worry about positioning or layout or anything like that. All I need to do is double-click on a button, and a button gets created, right? The look and feel doesn't look quite right, so let's go ahead and change it. You remember I was talking about how you could change the look and feel of a button dramatically by using styling? What I've done is, just in the interest of time, I've predefined a style that is local to the project. So let's go ahead and apply the style. So edit template, apply resource, and you'll see that these are all the styles that are there in my application that I took the time to create just to save some time. I want to apply this style called pin app bar button style. All it is basically a circle with like an icon in it for the pin button. Let's go ahead and declare the content property as well, because everything is coming from the style, so I don't really need to do anything. Okay, so that's my app bar button. Super simple to create. All I did is put a button and apply a style to it. Now I want to define an event handler so I can essentially do something when the button is clicked. If you're building an MVVM style application, you'd potentially have a data model that exposes a command that you could bind the button to. But in the interest of time, I'm just going to write some quick and dirty code. I'm going to add the click event handler, and I'm going to say add to favorites, which is the function that would get called when the user goes and clicks on the button, right? So this is my code over here. It essentially says, I've already pre-written the code. All it is doing is getting your data model and calling a function on it to essentially add the trip. That's pretty much it. Let's go ahead and run it and see what we get. You bring up the page, you right-click on it, add to favorites, that function gets called, and the data model gets updated, and hence the grid view changes as well. So it's pretty simple to do that. So the final thing that I wanted to do before we end is to show how to create that map view and add some pins to it. So let's go ahead and do that. To do that, I'm going to start from scratch by adding an item template. So let's go ahead and add new item and add like a blank page. I don't want to put any sort of complexity to it. I'm going to keep it simple. I just want the default blank page that has nothing on it. Let's change the name to trip map, because that's what I want to call my particular view that I'm designing, and hit OK. So as soon as the design surface comes up, you can start making changes to it. The first thing I want to do is put a map control. Now, for the map control, the guys at Bing have actually made an SDK that makes it easy for me to consume the control itself. I don't have to create the control from scratch. So I've installed that SDK on my machine, and it's already available in my toolbox because I've installed it. So let's search for map, and I'm seeing a couple of maps that I have from different vendors. I want to actually use the Bing map, so I'm going to click and draw it out, and you have sort of like a quick and easy way to create a map control in your application. I'm going to right-click it, and I'm going to say reset layout all, so it takes up all of the space that I have. Now, if you've used a map API to program against it, you need sort of a license. You need to go and it's free, but you can still get it you need to go and register yourself. And once you do that, you get given a credential that you can potentially use. So I'm going to just copy and paste it. Otherwise, you'll not be able to use the map APIs themselves. So here's my, I've gone ahead and like added the credentials. I want to do a couple other things before I hit F5. The first thing I want to do is I want to basically give the map a name because I'm going to programmatically access the map from code behind at a later point of time. So the way to give a name, like we saw before, is to just use the property inspector and call it photo map. So that's the name. The second thing I want to do is add a back button. So when the user clicks the button, the user is taken back to the page where they came from. To do that, I'm going to select the grid. Oops. There is my cursor right here. I'm going to select the grid, and I'm going to add a button to it. So that's the standard button. I'm going to position the button at the right place, right over here, because that's where the back button should be at. I'm going to apply, just like we did before, I'm going to apply a pre-canned style. All there is essentially I've taken some time to correctly design the back button style. You can actually use the standard one that comes with standard styles as well. I'm going to change the foreground to white because I don't really like the sort of like the black looking back button. And you have to add some code so you can actually, when the user clicks the back button, you can go back. Super simple to do. Just go and add the click event handler. Call it go back. And it's just one line of code, which is this.frame.goback. The navigation APIs in Windows 8 are pretty simple to use, and it's very simple to hook up this functionality. One final thing I have to do, I've created the map. Now I still need to define the navigation to the map when the user clicks the map button, right? So I go to main page. I have my, the button that the user clicks to navigate to the map, and I should add an event handler. Go to map. When this happens exactly, you have to do the exact same thing. Use the frame navigation APIs, this.frame.navigate, type of trip map, which is what we just created a second ago, if you remember. That's the name we gave to the page we created. That's it. So let's go ahead and run it. And when I click this button, it should take you to the page. It, of course, doesn't have the pins because we haven't added that functionality yet, but everything else is hooked up. I can go and back and forth as much as I want. All of that is functional. So let's go ahead and create some pins. It's a small snippet of code that you have to write, which I'll explain. The way to create a pin, in the interest of time, I've created a code snippet. All it is doing is getting the data model. It's getting all the trips in the data model. That's pretty much all it is doing. It is iterating over the trips, creating an instance of the control that I have in my project. It's all there is you can think of it as a rectangle. It is creating a bunch of rectangles, and it's positioning the rectangle to the property that I have in the data model. That's it. That's all there is to create a pin. Let's go ahead and run it. And there you have it. So you can see, I've added this nice animation so that it kind of looks more organic than everything just coming up at the same time. You can zoom in, and everything works. The last thing I wanted to add before we end is a couple of buttons so I can zoom in and out of the map itself, which is useful functionality for the map. So let's go ahead and add a couple of buttons like we have done before. So I'm going to add a button right here. I'm going to position it here. I'm going to set the style to, again, something that I've defined in my project. So that's the zoom in button style. I'm going to copy and paste it. So I have two instances of that thing. And the second button, I'm going to change the look and feel to completely something different, zoom out button style. For the zoom in button, I have to write a line of code to zoom in. So let's create a function called zoom in. And you remember how we defined a variable for the photo map itself? You can use that to access the map control and say set zoom level. You can say this.photomap.zoomLevel plus 1. So that's the way you would zoom in. And the same thing for zoom out as well. Select the map control, create a function, this.photomap.setZoomLevel. And you have to be a little careful because you don't want to kind of reduce the zoom level less than 1 because that's an invalid value. So you should use the math.max function to select a value of 1 and the photomap.zoomLevel minus 1. Because you really don't want to go less than 1, otherwise the control will throw an exception. So that's pretty much it. Super simple, a couple of lines of code. It's that simple to integrate the map control into your application. And you can see it's fully functional as well. So you can do the mouse or the keyboard. So one final thing before I switch over to slides and end for today. You remember I was talking about designing for multiple resolutions? Let's just take a look at how this application looks at. Right now I've kept it at 1920 by 1080. Let's take a look at how this application would look like on a 10-inch slate. There you go. You can see that looks weird, doesn't it? Like you can see like the button looks in a completely different position than what it did at full HD resolution. And so this is where you have to pay real careful attention to how you design your content. The way to solve this problem is to select both of these controls and sort of like group this into sort of a panel so that they're kind of, you know, we can control them as a group. So in this case, I'm using the stack panel. To introduce some separation, I'm just going to use a margin. Here's my margin. I'm going to select a top margin of, let's say, 20. So there is some separation between the two controls. And now the stack panel itself, you have to carefully position it so that it's layout aware. So in this case, I don't want the stack panel here. What I want is I want to let's go ahead and position it by saying, by clearing out a bunch of properties. So I want the stack panel in the middle of the page, right? That's what I'd want. So, oops, right over here. And then I want the stack panel to be left aligned, which is all the way to the left. I really don't want any of these margins, which is messing up my layout. So I'm going to clear out the margins completely. So there we go. The stack panel has now moved to the center. And then I want to push the stack panel a little bit to the right. So I'm going to use the right margin of, let's say, 50 pixels. Oops. Should work. It should work. I don't know why. Left, top, right, bottom. Yeah. So let's go ahead and run it. So with this change, now what you have done is at full HD resolution, this thing still works. I don't know why the 50 didn't work. I'll take a look at it later. But now I've designed my application so that it's kind of layout aware, and it works at different form factors. So this is what the device panel gets you. Please be sure to make sure that your application works at all different form factors. With this, I'm going to end for today, and I'm going to switch to, if you have any questions, we should go through them. I just wanted to quickly remind that, a couple of things. Related sessions. One of my colleagues, Kirupa, had a session. If you are interested in building HTML-style Metro applications, we also have support for that, and we have done a pretty good job there. Please feel free to watch Kirupa's session to learn about Blend's capabilities for building HTML-style applications. Tim here had a session where he talked about more code-related things. We talked a lot about how to use the tools. If you wanted to know what's more coding-related things, I would recommend watching Tim here's session. And finally, we focused a lot on C#, but everything is applicable for C++ as well, and it's a pretty important part of the platform. So please take a look at some of the C++ sessions that we have to see how C++ and XAML kind of work together. Here's a few additional resources. I'm going to skip past that. Please be sure to complete your evaluations at the end of the session. And at this point of time, I'm happy to take any questions that you might have. Yes. The question is, what about different resolution support? So the XAML platform itself, it's sort of so there are two parts to the question. First of all, the XAML platform has what we call dynamic layout, right? If you use panels like grid, like I showed with the stack panel, dynamic layout helps you a lot because that way you can position relative to the corners and things like that and keep your application sort of layout resolution independent. Second thing is the platform itself, the tech stack, and it's all vector-based, so that way it's also resolution independent as well. Third and final thing, if you're using scalar assets, which is, let's say you're using images, Windows has technology built in where you can use different images under different circumstances. So if you use a really low resolution image on a high resolution display, it's not going to look good. So Windows has technology built in, which I didn't demonstrate today, which makes it super simple for you to switch to a different resolution image. You don't have to write any code. You just do XAML. Windows will automatically pick the right image for you. So there are three different techniques. They all come together to help you build resolution-independent applications. More questions? Yes, please.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, it totally makes sense. Like, I just put something together quickly. Agreed. I probably should have followed more guidelines. I agree. You could do it either way. Like, if you look at the Bing Maps app that comes out of the box, it has those two buttons there. I don't know why they did it. I just copied them. So perhaps, right, that you probably should put it on the app bar itself instead of, you know. More questions? I'll hang around here. If you have some offline questions, feel free to stop by. I can give you my business card. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at any point of time. But thanks a lot for taking the time to attend the session.